Welcome to Innovating Leadership, Co-Creating Our Future, where we explore the evolving landscape of leadership and the bold ideas shaping tomorrow's world. Your hosts today are me, Maureen Metcalf, the founder and CEO of the Innovative Leadership Institute, and George Limbert, our new special event co-host, who's held multiple C-level roles in construction and hospitality. In this episode, recorded as part of Amazon's Delivering the Future event, we're joined by two transformative leaders who are shaping the future of how we move both goods and ideas. First, we speak with Sarah Matthew, Vice President of Global Delivery Experience. She epitomizes what it takes to lead with speed, curiosity, and operational excellence. Then we're joined by Kara Hurst, Chief Sustainability Officer, whose leadership is guiding one of the world's largest companies toward a more sustainable and equitable future. Together, these conversations highlight a powerful theme. Future-ready leadership means aligning innovation with values. Sarah and Kara show us what it looks like to lead with purpose in a world that demands both agility and accountability. Hi, we are talking to Sarah Matthew. Her role is Vice President of Global Delivery Experience at Amazon.
Excited to be here.
Talk us through what you presented this morning.
Yes. This morning when I presented, I had a fictitious mom of two kids who secretly was me, as you probably figured out. I have twin 11-year-olds. And so a lot of the anecdotes I shared were pulled right out of my regular life. So Ads Delivery is this brand new feature that we launched, which literally makes adding something to your upcoming order as simple as the press of a blue button on the Amazon website. The insight we had for customers is that often customers place a lot of orders. And when we look at order data, we see customers, a lot of our best customers, place a lot of orders and some within 10 minutes of each other. We realize probably that's somebody realizing 10 minutes later, I forgot X thing. And so how could we make that much easier for customers? Thus, the idea of add to delivery was born. And literally what we do is if you have an upcoming order, we take that information of when that order is going to arrive, what's in it, and we look across all our 100 million items that are in our store, and we say, which of these items could arrive with that upcoming delivery? And if the two match, we show a little blue button that will say add to today's delivery or tomorrow's delivery or Wednesday's delivery, whenever the delivery is. All you have to do is press that button and the item will magically arrive with whatever order you have coming. And since we've launched this about a month ago, customers have used it more than 50 million times.
I'm probably one of those customers who orders some stuff, realized I forgot something. I may get three Amazon deliveries in a day. All the different packaging, all the stuff. From a logistics and sustainability perspective, it's brilliant.
It is. We love it for both those things. I will tell you, though, if you're getting three Amazon deliveries, it is likely that each of those routes is already very dense, meaning there's a lot of customers who are getting the stuff, so you don't have to feel guilty about that. One of the things that we see about same-day delivery is it's so popular that people all in your neighborhood and in your block are going to be getting it all the time.
Oh, yeah.
But yes, I like getting fewer orders often because one person has to come to my house. And a lot of customers like that knowledge of knowing, hey, the stuff is coming all together. And so I only have to watch out for one delivery, for example.
I am a multi-orderer in short periods of time. So I feel like this feature has been around for a really long time.
So that's the magic of it is I was actually talking to another woman this morning who was like, I didn't realize that was new. And I think I just have used it 100 times because I just moved. And I was like, that's the beauty of it, right? You want it to feel so familiar that you feel like it's been around forever.
It sounds like a big part of what you do is listening to those customers. How do you listen to the customers and how do you deliver on that?
We watch what they do, watch their behavior, and we listen to them. And so one of the things you've probably heard about Amazon is the power of the anecdote. Every single one of the people who work at Amazon uses all the things that my team owns. And so I get lots of helpful emails from various people all around Amazon with their opinions and the challenges they've had are like either things, oh, you launched this thing, I loved it, or hey, you launched this thing, I sort of had a bad experience. While sometimes you get those emails and you go, oh, it's actually their gift, right? Because every anecdote uncovers some sort of problem. And if probably one customer has had that problem, lots of customers have had that problem. There's the power of the anecdote. Also, if you tell somebody who you meet for the first time that you run delivery experience at Amazon, everybody always has a story and an anecdote. And so I learn a lot from that. But then we also watch customer behavior. So I'll give you an example. We recently launched grocery delivery where you can get groceries along with your same day order. And we've seen that it changes how customers shop. And so we've seen that they've started adding more and more items like strawberries, bananas, milk, eggs to existing orders once you make it easy. We've also launched some new customer experiences where we have a dense grid of items that pops up, which has lots of perishable items. And we see that customers will look at that and go, oh, great, I'm going to add this, 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 this. And their units per order goes up a lot. And so we also just watch that behavior. And then sometimes we launch things and we see customers don't use them as much as we thought. So we do a lot of A/B testing at Amazon. And sometimes those A/B tests win, and sometimes those A/B tests do not win. And they don't win in surprising ways. And so then you quickly say, we should take this down. Customers don't like it. And what can we learn from that? And how do we make it better?
So you've talked about Amazon's record-breaking delivery speed, including in rural areas, and expanding same-day capabilities U.S. and globally. What leadership principles guide your team as you scale innovations while staying grounded in delivering on customer trust, employee well-being, and community? Those are a lot of variables to manage, and I'm guessing occasionally conflicting variables.
Yes. I think the first and foremost is customer obsession, right? At the end of the day, the reason we're expanding fast delivery to more and more places is that customers love fast delivery. And over and over and over again, we see the faster we deliver, the more customers come to Amazon. And the more they come to Amazon, they buy more. And they realize that Amazon can fulfill all of their needs. So it starts from the customer and from that customer insights. I think second is frugality. Probably you've heard Doug, our CEO of stores, talk about speed and cost to serve and how can those two go hand in hand. And so we look at what is the most efficient, effective way that we can get stuff to the customers? How can we repurpose all of the assets we have that are located close to customers? Some of the way that we're delivering fast speeds in rural areas is taking delivery stations like this one and saying, well, we have these delivery stations. We already get packages into them. Drivers come pick up those packages and they deliver them. What if we actually put product inventory in those delivery stations? Well, then drivers could pick that inventory up and deliver that to customers the same day. And so we're really sort of using all of our assets to their fullest to deliver for our customers. And then my favorite leadership principle, well, actually I have a lot of favorite ones. Two of my favorites. One is learn and be curious, which is there's always something to learn. And if you watch and you listen and you can learn from customers, I love coming into the field and going and looking at sites. The people running the sites on the ground always have some sort of insight that I would never have known sitting in corporate and using that to invent on behalf of customers. And then finally, probably my favorite is have backbone, disagree, and commit. It's a very unique Amazonian thing, which is basically if you're having a discussion, no matter what level you are, if you disagree, it's your job to disagree in that meeting and to raise your hand and say, hey, I have a different point of view. Now, at the end of the meeting, they might decide we heard you, but we're actually going to go in a different direction. That's when you commit. But I just love that we have this culture where we're always pushing each other and nobody at any level is afraid to question the way we're going. And often we find that that question opens up, oh, I hadn't thought about it like that. And we go a totally different direction than we would have.
I think of so many environments where disagreement is absolutely discouraged based on level.
Right. I was talking to one of my direct reports the other day, and I said, you know, what I love about you is that you disagree with me all the time, and you always tell me when I'm wrong. Now, am I always happy about that? Like, no, of course not. So, you know, but like, she makes me better because she's not afraid to say, I think you've got it wrong here. I think you're missing this. Here's a piece of data that you might not have had. I often say to my team, this is my opinion, and here's what I think based on the data I have, and this is my opinion. If I'm wrong, you got to tell me. And often they're like, well, here's some data that you missed and you're wrong. And I'm like, oh, great. Okay, I'm wrong. So we're going to do what you think.
And that's also your opportunity for them to learn when you're right.
Exactly. And it's funny because so Amazon has this leadership principle, I'll write a lot. Some of the lore about it is when it first came out, I think people interpreted as being right means I never change my mind, right? And so you would see these like senior, and I wasn't around them, but you would see these senior executives like dig their heels in and refuse to budge. And then they realized, no, actually, what we mean by our right a lot is leaders who are right a lot change their minds when new information comes. One of the favorite projects I worked on at Amazon was our employee COVID testing. We were learning in real time about COVID. And so what you thought yesterday, today was different. And so you had to learn how to pivot really fast in response to new information.
And so in that circumstance, being right changed by the minute.
Yeah. And I think for me, that made me a really different kind of leader because you realize like I don't know best and I have to listen.
George was running a hotel chain during COVID.
Really?
And so the two of you can probably share some interesting experiences about what do you do with essential workers? You're delivering packages when delivery drivers don't know if they're going to be safe. You're housing essential workers because they're afraid to go home.
For me, it was just about, again, the customer insights. How do you bring it back to what I do day in and day out? It's really listening to the customer, adjusting in response to new information, and kind of going from there. We started this talking about rural delivery. And I think for me, a lot of that insight is what we saw when we put this inventory near to rural customers and started delivering same day is their behavior changed. They come to Amazon more often. They buy more products. They start really leaning into those everyday essentials, the stuff that you need day in and day out. And actually, Prime membership signups started going up. And so you see like, oh, customers really love this.
So as you dig deeper into same day, I mean, what is the reach? Is it just major cities? Is it the rural areas in the Midwest? What's the reach of it now?
In the U.S., we're in 9,000 cities and towns in the U.S., announced this $4 billion investment to go to 4,000 rural towns by the end of the year. So we're going to be in a lot of places and cover a lot of our prime demand. And our goal is to get to as many customers as we can.
How about internationally?
So internationally, we are in Europe, for example. We're in 135 different locations in Europe delivering the same day. This year, for the third year in a row, we're on track to deliver for our prime customers globally at our fastest ever speeds with the most ever packages same day or next day. So we announced that in 2023 and 2024, and we're on track for 2025.
Incredible.
Yeah.
So as we think about health of your customers, same day food delivery in food deserts, people who don't have access to healthy food, this is a game changer for a lot of people, or medications.
Yes, we're doing same-day delivery of pharmacy. I don't directly work on that, so I can't talk a ton about that. But I know as a customer, same-day delivery of pharmacy is a game changer. I recently, probably in the last 6 months, changed my pharmacy to Amazon Pharmacy, and it has been life-changing. Like, I don't have to stand in line for 45 minutes at the pharmacy with a sick child or two in tow. I can go to the doctor, get the script, and it's at my on my doorstep that night. It's amazing.
So your insights into the customer, I mean, you listen to the customer, you are the customer. It sounds like you live, breathe, and dream all about what is the customer experience.
I do, yeah. And I have two customers who live in my house who are 11 who love to give me unvarnished feedback, which is also helpful. But yeah, I do think, though, the danger is if you are your own customer, you sometimes get blind to everybody is not like you. And so I always try to sort of also take it back to like, what are the insights from people who are not like me? Because there's a real danger in thinking that you are representative of everybody. And I know I'm not. We always talk in Amazon around the table. We're always like, we're Amazonians. We're weird. Meaning like we know so much about Amazon that we need to remember that customers don't. We have to really continue to mine those customer insights and not just rely on our own observations.
So I hear a lot of curiosity and learning and being open to feedback. What's your proudest experience of being an Amazonian?
I think my proudest experience of being an Amazonian is really watching people helping develop other people. And so watching people that you've hired sort of go and advance through their careers. Like I've got a couple of people on my team who I hired 4 or 5 years ago, and they've been through different teams, and now they're back on my team. And it's sort of amazing to see how they've grown in their experiences. There's nothing I love more than coming to a meeting and watching somebody do something way better than I could and just watch that next generation of leaders sort of rise. It's amazing.
The phrase nines hire tens, sixes hire fives. I probably didn't get that right. But the idea that Amazon hires people who are committed to excellence.
Yes, I cannot talk enough about how awesome my team is and how much they deliver and how customer obsessed they are and how they want to be better for our customers every day. And it's really inspiring to watch.
Well, the thirst for knowledge, the thirst for development, enhancing their careers, it really seems like a big passion of yours.
It is. I was a high school teacher, actually, before I went to business school. I love learning and I love teaching.
What was the subjects?
I taught after school and I taught in a alternative school. So I wrote, taught writing, creative writing.
Oh, wow.
So my kids made their own magazine, which was really fun. So they came up with a mission statement and a name and they wrote their own articles. I was debating, you know, should I go get my MBA or get my MFA in creative writing? You can guess which I chose. But I love writing and Amazon is a writing culture. So it's actually like a really good fit for me.
Sarah, thank you. I love hearing the way you are bringing your passion for customers, for learning, for training, for developing people to a role where your work impacts both external customers and internal team members on a daily basis. It makes lives better.
It's fun. I mean, at the end of the day, that's what it's about, right? It's about how do you make the world a better place? How do you make people's lives easier? You know, how do you make your lives or your team better every day?
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Sarah. And now we get to check back in with Kara.
Welcome, Kara Hurst. This morning you talked about the climate pledge, creating nuclear power, and also your water impact.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, we are absolutely committed to finding ways to utilize AI to accelerate our sustainability agenda, which is exciting. So the climate pledge we committed to in 2019, it's our goal to be net zero carbon by 2040. One of the most exciting things about that is how many other companies have also joined us in that commitment. So we announced at our New York City Climate Week events that over 600 companies are now in that with us. That spans so many different industries across so many different geographies, which was the intent that we can send these larger market demand signals that we really need across industries, whether it's steel or cement or fuels, transportation industries, that we need new products and services, that we need to transition these industries and these economies to move us in that direction. We're really excited about what we're seeing there. We've got joint action projects in so many different places around the world where we don't have all the solutions. It's certainly challenging in many ways, but we're trying to come together and share as private sector companies what works, and then also to work in public-private partnerships. So I can give you lots of examples specifically of what we're doing in those ways, working on building electric charging infrastructure with cities in India and Latin America as an example, because we can procure the electric vehicles, but we need cities to come along with us and build that infrastructure as one example. So the pledge is a commitment, but more than that, it's a community of action where people are coming together and working on sending these demand signals and taking action.
You talked earlier this morning, too, about the data centers and the water use, but how Amazon is doing it better and more sustainably.
Water for us is an issue that has been absolutely, I think, for many communities and many companies rising in importance. Many of us live in water-stressed areas. I actually recently was doing some work with a project we're doing up in the Pacific Northwest region where our headquarters is. I was even really surprised to find out that there's drought up there. I mean, we have a lot of rain, as people are well aware of in the Seattle area, but there's drought also in the Pacific Northwest region. So water stress is a real thing. And we know that data centers are requiring more energy and more water with the advent of AI. And so just to explain that a little bit, AI takes more energy. Data centers then heat up and they need water to cool, because sometimes people don't understand the connection between, you know that agricultural industries take water to utilize to make their products and other industries use a lot of water. But why would a data center? You need it for cooling. So a lot of the things that we're doing in that part of our business for AWS, we're looking at how do we actually, one, use less water? How do we design our data centers to use less water and use it much more efficiently? We have a water utilization metric that we publish, and we're one of the best in the industry at that. So, of course, we want to use that natural resource very, very efficiently, utilize technologies like liquid cooling and design our buildings differently and do all of the things we can do to respect the natural resource. But when we do need to use it for cooling, we want to commit to returning more water to the communities where we operate. So that's our commitment to be what we call water positive, or to return more water to the communities where we operate our data centers by 2030. And we're 53% of the way towards that commitment. So that means water replenishment projects that we're working with. We've got an investment with water.org that we're working on, and other partners. And places like India, where everyone knows water is a big issue. We looked across our entire Amazon operations and said it's really important that we go faster. So we have a water positive commitment by 2027 for India. Where we know we need to focus on it, where we need to go faster, we will. And we have lots of different projects around the world. And we launched also a center for AI and water excellence with the University of Pennsylvania, a number of utilities, and a leading water nonprofit, where we're publishing everything we learn and encouraging others to join that as well.
You are sharing all of that information with communities and with other companies.
Absolutely. I am passionate about that because I think that sustainability is an area where you can have pre-competitive collaboration. And we know that, yes, there are things we compete on as companies, absolutely. But this is an area where we're in this decisive decade, and we just don't have the time to keep a lot of solutions. And when we come together, we can go faster. So where we can, we will. And we started something called the Sustainability Exchange. There's 7 different areas of it, and we publish as much as we can about what we're learning. And so we really are taking a hard look at things like our building's playbook. We had all of our building engineers come together and build this playbook about how do you do a sustainable building and what do you need to do from HVAC to building materials to concrete and steel, things like that. And it was proprietary to us. And we looked at it and said, does that need to be proprietary to Amazon? And we decided it didn't. So we published it. We're also inviting other companies to publish things on the Sustainability Exchange. And we have over 40 companies now that have put materials on there. So I think by saying, look, we think this is a space where everybody can learn. Let's compete on who can go faster, actually, in sustainability rather than who can, you know, win. And let's share both what's working and what's not. Because I think equally, don't be afraid to fail. A lot of this is new. These are new technologies. These are new things we're trying. I want to know from my other peers and companies, like, what did you try and what worked? But also, what do I need to stay away from? What didn't work? Because the quicker we learn, the faster we can go.
It's really coming across your passion and being an incredible leader for sustainability. Where does that passion come from? What was that moment in your life where you said, I want to do really good things for the communities?
My passion comes from a couple different areas. One is I've always loved oceans, and I grew up in New England around the beach, and I just love the natural environment. So for me, that's a huge passion. I always joke that when I was a kid, I wanted to be like a dolphin or a whale trainer. I didn't think there's a thing as a whale trainer. I don't think that's a job, but I love you know, being around the natural environment. And I think thinking about not having a lot of that for my kids and their kids and all of that is something that drives me, as it does many people. But the thing that really drives me about working at a company like Amazon is the scale at which we get to put our resources to use. We have leadership principles, and one of them is size and scale for, you know, using our size and scale for good. And I try to live that every day. Our teams do. And I think it's such a privilege to be able to be at a large company that is investing time and energy and money and people into these kinds of efforts. I really take that to heart. That drives me to say, I operate from a position of privilege in that I get to be in a role where we can invest in these things and we can put resources towards them. I want to make the most of that.
Is it challenging to keep sustainability top of mind within the other departments, or is it a core value?
It is so much a part of our DNA. Of course, there are challenges. When you show people that we can win at business by doing this, that's the key. We have leaders who are passionate about it, and we have leaders who it's not top of mind for them, but they are excited about how they can win for their customer when they're doing this. And I gave some of those examples today as well. So there's a leader who might be personally motivated because they also love sustainability. That's great. But if there's a leader who's personally passionate about wanting to deliver the best customer experience, then let's talk about that, because there are plenty of ways to do that and deliver sustainability benefits. I understand that it may always not be number one on anyone's list. I just want it to be in the series of considerations as a business. Like, we would have cost and quality and business continuity and safety, you know, which should always be at the top. So all of those things are important components of a business. And I think our leaders understand that having healthy communities with clean air where people live, that is paramount to us having a healthy business. We can't grow our business without enough energy. We can't grow our customer base without having healthy communities and a lively economy. So these things, they are inseparable. You can't divide one from the other. And I think if you have a big worldview, which our leaders do, you understand that all of this is actually very much in tandem.
Not only do data centers use water, they use power.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk a little bit about what you're doing in the power space.
Absolutely. We've been at this for a long time. You know, of course, I've been growing our portfolio of renewable energy for many, many years, wind and solar energy. We're the largest corporate purchaser of renewable energy and have been for the past 5 years in the world. We have a portfolio of over 600 projects globally, and we will continue to do that. But we knew with AI that we have the need to continue to find new sources of energy, and nuclear has been a big solve for us and others on that. So we've done several investments in different kinds of nuclear projects. And one I talked about here at Delivering the Future has been our investment with X Energy and small modular nuclear. And so I think these technologies that are coming along are really exciting. They are new and we're learning as we go. But the potential, for example, with that partnership with X-Energy to bring on 5 gigawatts of nuclear and through small modular by 2039 is really exciting. And it is carbon free and it is a new source of carbon free energy that we can add and continue to grow our business in that way.
Some of us think of nuclear rods and disposal and all that stuff. You were holding nuclear orbs this morning. Can you describe that? Because it changes the mindset of what we think of with Fukushima. This isn't that.
It isn't. It's a new kind of technology. I was holding a small ceramic coated, it wasn't enriched, but a new source of energy. Yeah. And you know, I think these are the kinds of technological innovations and also things like geothermal, where it's going to be very interesting. And the waste and some of the other issues will be different, right? The safety issues are very different. They're much more contained and safer. One of the reasons that we're really interested in partnering with a company like X Energy or some of the other partners that we have is that safety is at the top of their considerations, as are sustainability and community partnership and the communities where they're operating. I mean, we're going to be the off-taker of this energy, to be clear, right? These are not our operations. But they're going into communities where people are excited about these new jobs. They're excited about the potential of learning these new technologies and what these kind of new engineering jobs are going to bring. And the safety aspects are different. So we're learning as we go, but it is a new set of dynamics and a new set of ways of operating. And so I think that there's a lot of potential, a lot of things to figure out, a lot of things that we're working with the industry and policymakers and regulators and all of the, and the communities on. But I think that the potential is enormous.
Well, and then I want to draw us back to the idea of not gatekeeping, that you're solving for water problems, you're solving for power problems, and putting the resources of one of the largest companies in the world to solve for those issues helps all of us.
We need to come together and think about this as also, what are the economic drivers? So we want to solve, we want to offer up what we know, but we also want to bring people together to send those demand signals. It is about, you know, coming together and saying there are solutions that we have and there's information we may have or learnings we have from the investments that we made. But we also have the power to say we have a very big value chain, a very big supply chain. Who can we bring together by saying, okay, we have put CarbonCure in 40 buildings and we've learned this amount, but now we want to open source that and we want to make it available to everybody else. That's an investment we made through our Climate Pledge Fund. Or we want to put a coalition together on sustainable cement and say, there is a market for this. There is a market for net zero steel. There is a market for sustainable aviation fuels. There is a market for these products and services again. Because the companies that are manufacturing them, they need to go back to their boards of directors with those signals and say, our customers are demanding this. And so we are a big customer and can also provide that. So I think that's equally important.
Kara, thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate all your insights.
Well, thanks so much for having me. It was a fun conversation.
Thank you. We love sharing the impact that you're making and hearing that companies at this scale are so committed to sustainability and creating a better world for all of us.
There's no other way forward.
Thank you all for listening to those wonderful insights. If you enjoyed our podcast, as always, please like or subscribe.
Do you love amazing stories? I know I do. I'm Michael Kent, and every week on my show, we examine something from history that's so unbelievable it sounds made up, but is 100% verifiably true. It's a podcast called The Internet Says It's True, and there are hundreds of episodes to choose from. For example, did you know the story of how Leonard Nimoy came up with Live Long and Prosper for Star Trek? Or how Colombia is dealing with a hippo problem that goes back directly to Pablo Escobar? Or one of my favorite stories, a man figured out that a nondescript Winnebago being auctioned online was actually an important part of space exploration history. These are all stories from The Internet Says It's True. Listening to a podcast has never been easier. You can listen through any popular podcast app, through the NPR app, or download the fantastic new WCBE app, click the Podcasts tab, and look for The Internet Says It's True with Michael Kent. You'll have so many stories up your sleeve, you'll feel like the smartest person in the room, especially if you're home alone.
Hi, this is Sue Foley, inviting you to listen to Music Journeys. Hear local and national artists share how the love of music began and what inspired their latest project. Mike Foley blends it all together with some music. Now, you can't believe him if he says he's related to me and inherited my musical talent, but you can be sure that other Foley will deliver a worthwhile listening experience too.
I guess I'm all right being that other Foley. Listen to Music Journeys Saturday afternoons at 3:30.
And in the podcast experience at wcbe.org.